What's going on, everyone? My name is Brandon, and this is the A-Bomb Energy Podcast, where we talk about everything automotive, and I am still a Special Operations Combat Medic, so sometimes we will talk about things that have to do with the Special Operations sphere, because in reality, life is a Special Operation, and that includes continuous improvement, self-development, analyzing situations, looking at gray zone-style warfare, and kind of in this podcast, what we're going to be talking about is the debacle that's happening with Volkswagen right now. And this is a classic example of a gray zone style warfare taking place via economic warfare. So back in the 90s, I'm just going to get right into it. Back in the 90s, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army of China, created this book called Unrestricted Warfare. And in this book, they talk about how they're going to destroy the Western Hemisphere, specifically America, and how they're going to do it. And if you decide to read that book, which I highly recommend, I think every military person, everybody in law enforcement, everyone in any type of decision-making process in the United States needs to read that book. That needs to be fucking mandatory at this point, because what's happening right now in the U.S. and in the Western Hemisphere, it's tracking every chapter with that book and every strategic tactical point that they're making in that book. The Unrestricted Warfare book, every point that they're making is occurring right now in the Western Hemisphere. And it's like everyone is just a turtle on their back and they don't know what's happening. Now, if we look at the VW situation, look at what's happening with VW. Look at the history of VW. If we just take like a tenth of a second here to analyze their history, VW was known as the people's car. It was always supposed to be this car that everyone could afford. And, you know, relatively speaking, it's still like that to a general consensus. If you look at like the VW Jetta, base model, manual transmission, still relatively affordable. I think you could get out the door with a brand new one for like 22 grand, 23 grand, give or take a few grand here, depending on what state you live in and your taxes and everything. If you wanted to get an SUV, you can look at stuff like the VW Taos, relatively affordable, the Tiguan, relatively affordable. But then now we have to look at the quality of these vehicles. And look, I think everyone knows that I have a very personal connection with Germany. I was born there. I lived there for 10 years, you know, in the military. I've traveled to Germany a couple times in Europe. And it's all, Germany is my second home. And the people there are my second people. America is my first home and Americans are my first people. But, you know, looking at the other side, Germany is my, it's just, I have a personal connection to it, you know, obviously. And so I look at VW as a brand that I very much respect, because VW is like the largest automotive group in the world. I mean, in reality, they're the largest, you know, Porsche, and I think they even own Lamborghini. I mean, it's crazy. Audi, all that stuff. They own a ton of different vehicles. There's actually a map you can look at online where you just type in VW Automotive Group and it shows how many brands they actually own or invested in. I mean, VW's invested, I think, $5 billion into Rivian at this point, which that's going to be critical and throughout the rest of this podcast here. But they are the people's car. They're supposed to be relatively affordable and reliable, but they're not. They're still somewhat relatively affordable, but reliability? Not really. Every car now nowadays is relatively reliable. It all depends on how well you treat the vehicle, if you understand the DNA of the vehicle. Here's an example. I own a 2009 Dodge Charger, 2.7 liter V6. Bought that car when I was in high school, when I was a senior in high school. Graduated basic training, boom, immediately bought it. Typical private move, typical army move of any young soldier. But bought that car. I understood from the get that if I get this car, it's going to require a ton of maintenance. I'm going to have preventative maintenance, oil changes. Manual says 6,000 mile oil changes. Bullshit. We're doing 5,000 oil changes, full synthetic oil. We're using the best oil that we can get, and we're using the best filter that we can get. Not a lot of people do that. And then when their car breaks, they sit there and they have this deer in the headlight, like shock look, like, I don't understand what happened. Like, I change the oil every, you know, 10, 15,000 miles. And why did the engine seize? Like, well, dummy, like, Come on. You know, and to a certain degree, like, I understand why people follow the manufacturer's warranty, like, I mean, or the manufacturer's guidelines on preventative maintenance. I have a friend who owns a Chevy Tahoe. I think it's like a 2006 or 2007. He's got like 300 and something thousand miles on it. And he follows exactly what the manufacturer's book says. And that was back in a time, you know, 2006, 2007. That was back in a time where you could relatively trust the engineer's guidelines, the recommendations from the manufacturer. But it's not like that anymore, because the way it works right now, if you look at like VW, right? So my Jetta, I own a 2024 Jetta manual transmission, bought it for the business to run deliveries for the energy drink company I own. Now, you look at the guidelines for that. It says oil changes every 10,000 miles. Every 10,000 miles, oil changes. It's a turbo liter. It's turbocharged, 1.5 liter engine. And you want to do the oil changes every 10,000 miles on a turbocharged engine? Are you insane? No. So we do the oil changes for my company. We do the oil changes every 5,000 to 8,000 miles. I think the first oil change that we did was at 8,000 miles. So it was way overdue, in my opinion. But, you know, running deliveries and all that stuff, and, you know, a ton of highway miles. So you have to look at, like, what is the difference between doing a lot of city stop and go? And what is the difference between doing a lot of highway miles? And that's why I was relatively acceptable to run an 8,000 mile oil change on that. That's not going to happen again. It's going to get a 5,000 mile oil change. You know, we have the package with the dealership too, where they'll do all the oil changes. And of course we monitor, you know, A-Bomb Energy monitors those oil changes. There's stuff around the vehicle to make sure it's getting done properly. I'll put it that way. We also check it too, whenever the car comes back. And I highly recommend, if you ever have a dealership, you know, an automotive repair shop or anything like that, do service to your vehicle. If it's something you can check, check it. Because there's been cases where I've taken my vehicle to a dealership to do an oil change because I wasn't at home and I was on the road, and I've checked the oil and they didn't do shit. They didn't even change the filter. They didn't change the oil, nothing. So, and the reason they do that sometimes is, like, they'll look on the computer, and this was at a dealership, they'll look on the computer and they'll be like, oh, the last oil change was 4,000 miles ago. I don't know why he's having the oil change done. Fuck it. We're going to just charge him for the oil change anyways. So you'll see that kind of stuff happen. So I highly recommend you always do that. But getting back to VW, because we're trailing off like what we always do. Largest automotive group in the world. In total, they have around 700,000 employees. And in Germany, they have 120,000 employees. That is a ton of people. Now, if you don't understand what's going on with VW, let me break it down here for you. VW is in a massive financial crisis. They are in a massive market share crisis. And by financial crisis, I mean, they're $240 billion in debt. And experts and people kind of following this VW crisis a little bit more than I am, they think it's actually closer to $300 billion. So they have the equivalent of debt of almost a country at this point. There's some countries that are like $300 billion in debt. They have debt. I mean, look at certain states in the U.S. You have certain states that have less debt than VW, which is crazy if you think about that. So we're looking at massive debt. I don't know how they're going to pay that off, to be honest with you. If they're 240, let's just go with the low number. If they're $240 billion in debt, I really don't know how you're going to pay that off, because they're losing market share in China. And half of VW Group's market share, half of their profits, were coming from the Chinese market. And this kind of goes back to that Chinese documentary that I made. All these automakers went into China and they went in there big dick swinging and thinking they could just conquer the world in the Chinese market. And right now it's kind of coming back to bite them at this point, because the shift over to electric vehicles is massive in China. You know, you look at Western markets, it's not as aggressive as it is in China. And there's a reason why this is happening in China. It kind of goes back to my first point of unrestricted warfare. China brought in all these companies, willingly brought in all these companies, you know, VW, GM, Ford, Tesla, all these massive groups that really know how to build a vehicle. They really know the process. They have the technology. They have the engineering, the innovation. They have the ideas on how to do this. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, General Motors isn't innovative. Yes, they are. They are a very innovative company. I just don't like them. And I think they make a lot of crappy products. That's just my opinion. But they brought all these companies in there and they stole all the ideas and technology from them. And they stole the manufacturing processes from these companies. And what they did is they realized, hey, you know what? We can't compete with Volkswagen on an internal combustion vehicle, but we can compete with them with an electric vehicle because, in general, an electric vehicle is much simpler to produce and the engineering is much simpler than a internal combustion engine. Now, repairing those things, that's a whole nother subject. A internal combustion engine vehicle is way easier to repair. It's much easier to keep an internal combustion vehicle, a gas-powered vehicle, on the road longer than it is to keep an EV vehicle. I mean, just look, let's just kind of take a step back here and really take a bird's eye view. You have vehicles that were manufactured in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, all of that, still on the road today. But you're not going to have vehicles, electric vehicles, that are 10, 20, 30, 40 years on the that were manufactured 10, 20, 30 years ago on the road today. You're just not going to see that. And the reason you're not going to see that is because the battery technology obviously is not going to last that long. They haven't really figured out how to recycle batteries at this point. I hope they do figure out a way where they can just like pulverize them, take all the precious metals, use special magnets and all that stuff and certain chemicals to separate the materials from the batteries. I hope they can get to that point. I don't know. I hope they can because it looks like everything is trending towards more EV, but more kind of like hybrid style where they have like, you know, like my 2022 BMW M340i. It's a mild hybrid where it has a system in it where it charges a battery and then it allows you to go faster. I'm cool with that. I don't have a problem with that. I know a lot of people are like, I don't want anything electric in my vehicle. Hey, man, I get that. I totally get that. I like it in mine. Sure, it makes it a little bit more complicated, but it makes the driving experience better whenever I have both internal combustion and electric propelling my car faster, especially through a curve. It's kind of cool. It's kind of fun, especially, you know, when you got ladies in the vehicle, my men, you know, listening to the podcast, you got a lady in the vehicle and you floor it and, you know, her, we'll just say grenades on her chest kind of go through the back. You know, it's kind of cool. So, you know, just tossing that one out there. But it's very interesting to see what's happening here. Now, because China couldn't compete with this internal combustion engine, they're leaning now heavily towards electric vehicles. And who sucks at making electric vehicles? Well, you could argue China does to a certain degree, but I would argue that vehicles like the BYD, Fisker. It looks like a Fisker. It's not a Fisker, but I'm pretty sure it's a knockoff of a Fisker. I'm pretty sure they're Chery, you know, some of these other brands, they actually make some pretty decent electric vehicles. But who sucks at making electric vehicles? General Motors, they suck at it. Ford, they're probably one of the worst. VW, they're terrible. Mercedes, they're terrible at it. If you compare the internal, you know, systems of a Mercedes electric vehicle to a BYD, it is a night and day difference. The BYD is much simpler. It's much easier to work on for yourself. It's much easier to engineer and it's cheaper to produce. Where if you pop the hood on a Mercedes, you can clearly see there is a massive, massive emphasis on over-engineering, which that's what Germans do. Germans over-engineer everything. And there's a reason for it, but, you know, a lot of people just don't care. They want something simple, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. So because China realizes that they can't do that, now they have to pivot towards electric vehicles. Now, if, again, taking that step back and getting that bird's eye view, that geopolitical view, that gray zone style warfare aspect, if you look at what China is doing, okay, they're dominating the market with electric vehicles. Cool. The VW, Porsche, Audi, name every other brand, every other legacy auto brand can't compete with electric vehicles in China. Sick. More people are wanting to transition to electric vehicles in China because it's incentivized heavily in China. It's cheaper. Boom. Now China dominates that market with electric vehicles in their own country. Now the next move shifted over to other countries. What they can do now is because Western markets are being, you know, the green terrorists out there are forcing people to switch to electric vehicles and making it basically using government and law to mandate electric vehicles instead of allowing the free market to decide what type of vehicle we want to go with. This is going to destroy legacy automakers out there. They have no chance at fighting this fight. They have no chance. Look at VW right now. they are getting destroyed in the EV sector in Europe, for example. Okay. Now, this is what I'm talking about here. Whenever we pull out, we do this geopolitical analyzation here. We analyze it. The EU government now, before, they were all about electric vehicles, bringing in electric vehicles from China because they were being bullied, which was kind of getting back to my previous podcast. They were getting bullied into allowing these Chinese EVs to come in. But what they didn't realize, or maybe they did realize it and they just got paid a lot of money to mandate that, allow the Chinese EVs to come in. But what they didn't realize that it was going to destroy their economy. People are going to shop with their wallets. And unfortunately, if you allow a slave labor made product from China to come into your economy, people are going to buy it. There's not really a lot of brand loyalty out there. There's still some of it, sure. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But there's still a ton of brand loyalty out there. But it's not enough to keep a company like VW or Porsche, Audi, Mercedes, BMW. It's not a lot to keep them afloat whenever they're, you know, you see an Audi EV or a VW EV that's double the cost of a Chinese EV. People are going to go with that. And I remember the first time when I was in Europe a few months ago, I first saw a Chinese EV in Brussels, and I was like, holy smokes, that's a BYD seal. And I couldn't believe it. I was actually quite shocked seeing that. I would think that people were going to go with manufacturers from their country, but that's just not the case because people are going to shop with their wallets. And I started paying attention a little bit more. You know, I was riding these scooters around Brussels, you know, may or may not have been inebriated, but I saw all these Chinese vehicles and I was like, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. Oh, no, 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 no. And this is where the wheels started kind of turning in my head. This was like, I think 4 or 5 months ago whenever I saw that. And the wheels really started turning in my head. And I'm like, uh-oh, these Chinese EVs are going to start invading Europe. And I started doing more research on it. And I just, my mind was just blown. And now if you look at the EU's policy with Chinese EVs coming in, they've really taken a step back. They've taken a massive step back, and they're imposing tons of tariffs now on Chinese EVs coming in. And if you look at the media industrial complex, whenever the EU government was allowing these Chinese EVs to come in, they were loving it. They were, this is great. It's great for the planet. You know, all these things, and they're saying all this stuff. And like, look, I'm not against Mother Gaia. I'm not against the planet. I'm all about being responsible. But there's levels to that. And if you're irresponsible with your green initiatives, you're going to destroy the economy of your country. And that's exactly what we're seeing happening with VW. They have 120,000 employees in Germany, almost 700,000 employees worldwide. And right now, four factories in Europe are going to have to close. That's tens of thousands of workers. That is a ton. That is a ton of people. That's probably 10,000 workers right there closing four factories in Europe. Four. Three of them are in Germany. One is ironically in Brussels in Belgium. And they're going to close those. And what's happening that you're seeing a response now by the EU. Because if you don't know the geopolitical situation with the European Union, you have all these different countries, you know, obviously the English left the European Union, which, you know, take it how you like it. I think it was a good thing. They were getting wrecked by the EU. But Germany pretty much leads the EU. They pretty much do. They're pretty much in charge of what everyone is doing in the EU. And if you look at what the policies that they were enacting, they were allowing all this to happen. And now they're backpedaling because it's destroying the German economy. Wolfsburg, for example, is one of the largest factories for VW. And they're talking about closing that plant. If that VW plant closes, the town of Wolfsburg ceases to exist because that entire town is literally centered around Wolfsburg or around VW. That is devastating. So now we're going to have this massive, massive economic turmoil in Germany if that happens, because how many, you know, like what I was saying before, they employ 120,000 people. There's 10 factories in Germany and you're going to close three. That's a big deal. That's almost a third. Now, this is what happens when you allow governments to run economies instead of the free market. There are levels to the free market. If you have a complete open free market, you're going to have world domination by one country. That's just that's the reality of the situation. There needs to be certain things set in place to prevent certain countries from overpowering other ones, i.e. tariffs. You know, that's why we need regulations in the market. We need them, because if you don't have, you know, emission regulations, if you don't have, you know, certain economic regulations and trade regulations, you're going to have Homer Simpson dumping toxic radiation in the world, in the town's water supply. So you have to have these things. But they're, right now, what we're seeing is we're seeing an overbearing of regulations, overbearing of, you know, these free market practices, well, anti-free market practices that are happening in the economy right now. And that's why we're seeing the destruction pretty much of VW. I don't know what VW is going to look like in the next 10 years. I really don't. I would say they're still going to exist, sure, but they're not going to be anything like what they were before. And you're probably actually going to see, if they really start scaling back, we're going to see an increase in price of vehicles. And I know a lot of people like to claim the current situation with VW is because of Dieselgate. But look, everyone during Dieselgate, everyone, if you're not familiar with that, that was VW cheating the emissions testing, which was mainly they passed the VW, the standard VW vehicles that were even cheating the emission systems for diesel vehicles. They would still pass, but they would have to pay a higher fee to the government. And that was the reason for doing that. But here's what everyone seems to kind of casually forget with Dieselgate. Every car maker was doing it. VW was just the one who got like really caught. They got like caught. Every other manufacturer, Ford, GM, Mercedes, BMW, they were all doing it. Every single one. So the fact that like VW got hit hard for that, and they were, that was the reason why Electrify America came out, was because Dieselgate, because VW cheated on the emission scandals. One of the penalties was creating the Electrify America charging network, which is absolutely garbage. It's one of the worst charging systems out there. VW is not a tech company. They're an automaker. And that's why these legacy automakers are struggling to get these electric vehicles and produce a quality vehicle. They're also overloading it too with too much tech, which is also kind of biting them in the rear. It just is what it is. But the other problem that's also being casually ignored is unions. Look, unions were a good thing when they first started, because you had the very quintessential greedy fat capitalist, which I'm a capitalist, by the way. But there's a thing called ethical capitalism, by the way. That seems to also be forgotten, which is kind of weird. But I'm an ethical capitalist. But you had the unethical capitalists, you know, during the Industrial Revolution, 1800s, early 1900s. You had the, you know, very fat cat, you know, typical, like, you know, got the top hat, monocle, you know, cigar, and he's got a big belly and he's sitting there, ah, work, work, work. You know, that was the response. Unions were the response to that. Overworking, of course. Whenever you're working basically slave labor conditions, yes, I understand the creation for unions. Big asterisk now, big however. At this point, unions are now destroying companies, because unions have gotten way too big to the point where they can bully the company into pretty much anything they want now. And you have, you know, like whenever you saw the UAW strike happening in the United States, that really jacked up the automotive industry for a while. It raised prices, which we all paid for, by the way. So every time these union dudes go on strike and the UAW forces these strikes, we all pay the price. The consumer pays a massive price. And I'm very anti-union at this point. I think there needs to be another system. They need to figure out something. There needs to be more ethical capitalism injected into the market with a lot of these automakers. Like, if you have people that are getting screwed, you need to take care of your people. Like, if anybody ever comes works for A-Bomb Energy, if I have to take the last dollar out of my wallet to make sure you're good to go, I'm going to do that. Because as a CEO, you need to take care of your employees. And I have people that subcontract work for me, and they are taken care of. You know, there's times like here's an example. I'm creating this mini nuclear bomb prop piece to put a energy drink can in. And we're going to run contests with it. We're going to give it away to people. The guy who's manufacturing it is doing a fucking awesome job. He's working his balls off. I mean, he's not going to be able to impregnate his wife at this point, because he's working so hard to get this thing made for me, because it's a complete custom design. He gave me a price. He ran some numbers, did some tests on some stuff. The pricing wasn't working, or the prop that we were making wasn't working. And so he's having to spend more time, more of his money to make sure that the product is good to go. And you know what? I gave the dude a bonus. I gave him a little bit of a little sugar on top for doing a good job and working his butt off to make sure that this product gets done. That's being a good CEO. That's being a good boss. That's being a good person, taking care of people. And a lot of these companies like Mary Barra with GM, they seem to have forgotten that. They seem to have forgotten where they've come from. And so they're also part of the problem. You know, with VW, for example, their former CEO was fired for calling out the problem with Volkswagen. You know, he basically said in an interview, it takes three times longer to produce a vehicle compared to other manufacturers. And not too long after, he got fired because he was calling out the problems. He was trying to fix the situation with VW. But because of the power of these unions, they're like, oh, whoa, 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 because it takes three times longer, my people aren't going to get paid. Or if you reduce the three times time that it takes to create a vehicle, my people aren't going to get paid now. So because it takes longer to make a vehicle, the people that work for VW will get paid more. You see what I'm saying? So these unions are destroying it, destroying VW, for example. You want to have a quality work environment. You want these things. But unions at this point, they're part of the problem. They are definitely part of the problem. And I would love to have a conversation with someone who disagrees with me on that, because everyone so far that I've discussed this topic with, because I'm like, look, like, explain to me the reason why we need to have them at this point. Like, I understand you want to keep a company in check, but at this point, like, come on, this is the 21st century at this point. So it's very dynamic. It's a very fluid situation, and it really sucks. It really sucks for VW, and it really sucks for the people, the consumers. It sucks for the workers. It's just a shit situation all around. And because they have so much debt, because they can't compete with EVs, and they're losing market share, a massive market share, I really don't know what's going to happen with VW here pretty soon. I'm actually a little concerned for them. But here's the other thing that we need to consider. There's a quote by a very intelligent man that says, when all else fails, they take you to war. So think about that. I want you to ponder that quote. When all else fails, they take you to war. I want you to open a history book. I want you to look at the economic situation of a country before any war started. Any war. World War I, World War II, whatever. You can go back to the sinking of the Lusitania. You could go back to Remember the Maine. Look at the economic situation of every country that initiated or invaded or whatever. Look at that situation. Just want you to be a thinker before anything else. That is the goal. In special operations, we have a saying, people are more important than hardware. And using your brain, these things are critical because people are the only thing that have a brain. I don't care how good AI gets, nothing's going to beat a brain. Nothing's going to be able to beat the power of critical thinking, deductive reasoning, logic, empathy. These things are critical in our society, and it's getting even more critical. So I want you to take a look at that. I would love to hear your feedback, by the way. The Patreon guys, you guys have been hitting me up and telling me about the podcast, what you think. Hit me up on YouTube if you listen to the podcast. You could comment in a community post if you want. But I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on the podcast. Look, this is a real podcast. This is where you're going to get the real Brandon. This is where I'm not really going to hold anything back at this point. Certain platforms I have to, but other than that, this is what you're going to get. And if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, you can hit me up on Facebook, Instagram. You can hit me up on my website, abomenergy.com. There's a chat section there. I think my email's at the bottom of it, so you can hit me up there. Love to talk to you guys. It's always a pleasure. So hope you guys have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, or whatever holiday that you celebrate. If it's Festivus, I hope you have a great Festivus. So I'm out of here. Thanks.